Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, a returning guest. And you know, if they come back, they're good. I think so. And so we hope you agree. Philip Van Dorn is my guest this morning, investment analyst for MarketWatch, marketwatch.com. And we've had Philip on the show before. He is a well-seasoned analyst on the street from May of 2010 to March 2014, senior analyst for the street. And since then, he has been an investment analyst for MarketWatch, editorial articles, publication on the street, a lot of financial coverage, banking, financial services, which is a very relevant topic for me, and has had his articles featured in a lot of respected places. Other outlets running his articles include CNBC and Yahoo Finance. He also has been in banking and has his Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from Long Island University. Philip, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Glad to be back.
Glad to have you back. We've got some great stuff, or interesting stuff, I should say, in your articles and on MarketWatch.com. And one that's kind of from the This Just In department, which I think is very, very nice. Philip did the courtesy of sending me over some breaking news, if you will, about American Express. So I think this is very interesting. So tell us a little bit what's going on with American Express, and then we'll dig into some of our other topics.
Well, as some Costco shoppers may know, American Express has an exclusive deal with Costco where they provide co-branded credit cards under the True Earnings brand to Costco's customers. And if you shop at Costco at this point, you have to use the American Express card or you can use cash or debit card. So the only credit card right now that you can use there is provided by American Express, and American Express will lose that deal on March 31st, 2016.
That's
this
a big deal.
This has hurt the shares, which were down as much as 7%.
Wow. Okay, that's a big deal. Well, what do they say? You know, American Express don't leave home without it, especially if you're going to Costco, and that's not necessarily the case. So the impact then, you're already seeing a pullback on the stock?
Yes. The company's executives had said that there will be a significant impact, those are their words, on 2015 and 16 performance, although they did not give precise numbers to my knowledge about how much they expect earnings per share to decline or how much they expect the growth rate to be curtailed.
Okay.
But about 30% of the company's spending volume comes through co-branded cards.
Okay.
So it's a very important business for them, and Costco has over $100 billion a year in revenue, a lot of which is funneled through those cards. So it is a big deal, and American Express basically said it could no longer afford to pay to play to maintain that relationship.
Okay.
So they're getting out of it.
So Costco basically is saying, okay, we want more, we want at least what we're getting. Is there any risk here, Philip, you think, with some of the other co-branded arrangements that American Express has, that they might, some of these other co-branded relationships, I'm thinking, for example, just off the top of my head, Delta, I know, has got an American Express card. Are any of those subject to risk for American Express of following in suit with Costco?
I would say yes, because American Express has said that these relationships have gotten more expensive for the card issuers over the last several years.
Okay.
But at the same time, American Express said many of those deals are expiring that have nothing to do with American Express, so they expect to go out and grab more business in that area over the next couple of years. So the story isn't completely told yet, but the story sheds light on what might be a better play for investors.
That was going to be my next question, is I know that you've been following Discover for a while, and you think that's they've got a lot of potential, I know from our last conversation, and they're not trading at as high of a multiple on forward earnings.
That's correct. American Express, through yesterday, was trading for about 13.1 times consensus 2016 earnings estimates, where Discover was trading for about 10.3 times forward earnings. Discover's achieved a high return on equity in the mid-20s range over the past several years, just behind American Express, and the two of them have far and away better returns on equity than any of the other among the top 30 U.S. banks. So these are your strongest earnings performers among large U.S. banks, and American Express tends to trade much higher than Discover. It's got better name recognition, and a very long-term track record. But Discover, like American Express, has its own transaction processing network. And with these high returns on equity, over time, it seems like you just can't miss with either stock. but Discover may require less patience for investors over the next couple of years than American Express.
Well, that's a big difference because, as you know, Philip, investors don't tend to be very patient.
Yes, and sometimes they should be. If you have a stock, if you have a company that consistently brings in returns on equity above 20%, especially a bank, it's golden. And over time, it funnels through to the investor. Companies will raise their dividends or buy back a lot of shares. The share count gets reduced, and earnings per share get pushed up even further. So over time, they're excellent investments, and they fared quite well, remaining profitable through the credit crisis, unlike
well,
a lot of other banks.
Yeah, that's very true, because a lot of banks did not fare as well. And I'm looking at their recent dividend yield, and it's in the 1.6 range. So not a bad yield, but if what you said plays out for Discover, they certainly could see a better, richer dividend yield for investors.
Yeah, I guess neither one really has the most exciting dividend yield, but they have had the growth. Just looking, actually, yeah, American Express is just over 1%, so these are not dividend plays.
All right, well, but to your point, they may be down the road.
They could be, that's right.
Okay, cool. Well, I want to shift gears. There's several other topics we'll get to, Philip, but we'll grab a quick break and we'll come back. Philip Van Dorn is our guest today, investment analyst for MarketWatch, marketwatch.com. Come back. Another great article by Philip. I want to talk to him about Twitter and what's been going on there with the company and how they've been doing very well for their executives and perhaps at your expense. Stay right there.
What if in the time it takes to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? If you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? There is no cost or obligation to meet with David. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com for more information. Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Philip Van Dorn, our guest, a repeating guest, and giving us timely and insightful analysis from his perch overlooking Wall Street, MarketWatch.com, and we're glad to have Philip come back to us and report in and give us some commentary on some recent late-breaking news. We talked about American Express and Discover before the break, and another article Philip just wrote about, actually an article from February 6th, that talked a little bit about Twitter. So what's going on with Twitter? I mean, first of all, I guess my first question is, they're publicly traded. Are they making any money?
Twitter is not showing any profits on a GAAP basis because they're making stock-based compensation to employees, which means executives, for amounts greater than their earnings. So earnings are being wiped out by stock-based compensation. These are non-cash items, which are ignored by some analysts, but I think that the non-cash expenses are actually very costly to investors,
yeah,
especially over long periods of time, because the share count keeps increasing. The shareholders continue to be diluted, which can cost quite a bundle if the company starts mopping up the dilution by repurchasing shares further down the line.
Excellent, Philip. You're right on the money with that. And, you know, you mentioned it being on a GAAP-based, generally accepted accounting principles. And I remember from my intermediate two accounting class at University of North Florida doing the analysis of diluted and fully diluted shares. And you do have to factor all those in when you do your calculation of earnings per share and on a fully diluted basis for my fellow CPAs out there. So the earnings per share, they're negative, and you're exactly right. While it may be that they have cash flow to operate the business as they continue to pump out that compensation, it shows as a negative for earnings per share for GAAP. But if they can make the cash flow flow, I mean, this is, to be kind of, I don't know, this may come across as crass or maybe a little too judgmental, but is this kind of the fox guarding the hen house? Is that what's going on here, where it's a bit of self-dealing to the executives? Or, I don't know, is this a warning sign that maybe this is not going to be the best play long-term to be an owner of Twitter stock?
It's hard to say. If the company continues growing by leaps and bounds and becomes consistently profitable, the stock could be a winner.
Okay.
But regardless of what happens, there's still the dilution which will have to be mopped up. So this type of compensation will cost investors down the line. And Twitter, they've been publicly traded for less than a year, and in similar circumstances, the stock option awards tend to be rather high. Mm. But during the third quarter, the stock awards equated to 47% of revenue. During the fourth quarter, it was down to 37% of revenue. But the company's been doing it so consistently. So it does seem a little bit excessive based on on the relationship to revenue and the fact that the company's still not showing a profit. We have a suggestion in the article that's somewhat technical on how companies can improve their disclosure to make this cost more clear to investors and analysts.
Well, that's very helpful and I think much needed. All right, so let's move on to another topic if we can, Philip. Go to some other companies. I know another area that is very interesting and, of course, a lot of attention is over on energy stocks. And I know that you wrote recently also about that as well, a February 11th article over on MarketWatch. And you had 10 cheap energy stocks that could soar as much as 202%. 200% is not enough, but 202%. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunity, of course, in energy stocks if we see a rebound. And are we at an oil bottom? Are you seeing a lot of potential growth out there for those energy stocks that have been beaten up so much?
I don't know if we're at an oil bottom, but what I do know is that a lot of big-time investors are looking to scoop up cheap energy stocks right now. That 202% is just the way that the figures turned out. We simply listed the 10 energy stocks with average trading volume of more than 50,000 shares and share prices above $1 with the highest upside implied by consensus price target. So this is based on the estimates of sell-side analysts, which some investors take with a grain of salt, but we just put out the information for the readers. We also put up lists of energy stocks trading lowest to 2015 consensus earnings estimates and 2016 earnings estimates. If you think oil has already bottomed, it might be much safer to go with the large integrated oil companies that have deep pockets, such as ExxonMobil and Chevron. However, this list could be useful for investors who want to dig in further on their own to properly consider whether or not to jump in.
Well, that's well put, Philip. I think there's a lot of potential opportunity there. And of course, you know, I'm not going to, at least from a financial planner position, some chair I sit in, tell people to go load up all their, put all their money into oil stocks. That would be overly aggressive, but I think it could be a nice play. All right, Philip. So I guess the thing I need to get in here is that, reiterate the point is that, you know, from a financial planning perspective, the chair I sit in, I don't want people to go out there and load up all on energy stocks, but it could certainly be part of an overall well-balanced diet, right? To have some exposure to energy, especially if you feel like there's a lot of this upside potential, you know, not necessarily to say, hey, let's market time, but there's some good opportunities here.
Yes, I don't think this type of an article is a financial planning tool at all. What it is an opportunity for investors to get some information that may be difficult for them to get in any other way.
There you go. Good. No, well, listen, that's why we got you on here, Phil. I'm glad to get the insight. And I actually will tell you that from my own personal portfolio, I've seen a couple of opportunities that I thought made sense to include, where a couple of positions that I wouldn't necessarily recommend for my clients, a little more aggressive. But for the right situation, it could certainly be part of the portfolio. And some of these stocks, as you very well know, they've got some decent dividends, and if they're able, if the prices do build back up for oil, those yields are going to be pretty significant by getting in at today's prices.
Yes, and you also had better take the yields with a grain of salt, depending on the size of the company. Now, some companies are announcing plans to reduce capital spending because they need to reduce production growth and then production in order to prop the price of oil up,
right.
And some will be cutting dividends.
Yeah.
So if you have an especially high dividend, maybe you need to look further to see how well the dividend is supported by expected cash flow.
Very good.
Because you may well be facing dividend cuts.
And I would also add to that, that's your spot on, Phil. I would add to that that, you know, if you've got a company saying they're going to have a, you know, if you're looking at Yahoo Finance and you're seeing a projected dividend of 20%, well, maybe you make your purchase based on it being a 5 to 10% dividend. I mean, that's just setting the more realistic expectation. All right. Well, let's come back now to a little bit more on the, you said, you know, you talked about some of the production aspects of, you know, with oil and what's happening with the pricing. The oil frackers, what is all of this having an impact on the, you know, these new explorers for places to get oil from that everybody seems to have in their sights, the Middle East and others trying to shut them down, so to speak, or are they staying on their game of still, you know, pursuing the fracking and getting that oil because that's a, you know, it seems to me they've already made their bet and they need to finish the job. Or how are they faring through all of this?
It's still a little bit early in the game, but we would expect smaller players in the domestic fracking business to begin merging.
Okay.
Some of them can go bankrupt very easily because some have costs that exceed the current wholesale price for oil. At the same time, we have discussed with a company called Navport, which tracks data for domestic oil production on the well level, which they get from state regulators. And what they are seeing is an increase in production per well by many of the largest players in the industry. So the frackers are becoming more efficient. They're getting more oil out of each well. So even though the rig count is declining, production may not be declining that quickly, at least yet. So we have an article here called These Oil Frackers Are Pulling Away from Rivals, which is showing the are most efficient or have had the greatest efficiency improvement in the Eagle Ford Basin in Texas, which is your biggest basin for horizontal hydraulic fracturing right now. So what we're trying to do here is give more information to our readers because they might be able to detect some imbalances in the market where the more efficient players might be the ones to invest in right now.
Very good. That it's an interesting approach that you could see the consolidation. You could see, ironically, the cost control coming into play with what you said about the cost being in excess of current price, that some of them are finding ways to squeeze a few more drops, no pun intended, out of these oil wells without having to expand their capacity and just getting more per well. And that it's very interesting how all of this is playing out and what was expected and where all this came from in terms of the pressure from, for example, Saudi Arabia saying, you know, we're going to, you know, they made it pretty clear what their goals were. And so it's going to be very interesting to watch. And I really appreciate what you guys are doing over at MarketWatch, Philip, because it's very insightful to be able to have this kind of resource and information at our fingertips.
You know, maybe we all should have expected this. The incredible increase of domestic production led to this.
Right.
And it's going to be very disruptive because a lot of people in this country will lose their jobs as production expansion is curtailed. But the good news is the United States is less dependent on foreign oil.
Amen.
The parasite can no longer hurt the host as it was starting to do when the price of oil was well above $100.
Right.
Now, even though the foreign competitors may well hold on to their market share because they have a much lower cost, the good news is for U.S. consumers who are not likely to face the $4.50 per gallon gasoline cost that we had a few years back.
I think the key thing here is that there's a lot of impact that is yet to be determined, you know, and I think your point's well taken, Phil, about the $4.50 a gallon gas. You know, that was just brutal back in what was that, 2008, 2009, and the result of the oil getting closer to like $150 a barrel. The independence that, at least to some degree, that we've got domestically, while you're right, while it is disruptive for the employment of folks that are in those industries and where they might need to curtail or pull back on production, I don't think the trend's going to stop. I think we're going to continue to see that, and we're just going to find more ways to get more efficiency and the whole other area that we haven't even talked about, and I just had a client I met with because they're directly involved themselves, is up in the Northeast. We've got this gargantuan gas industry that has just exploded, just so much capacity of gas coming online, now a whole other area of energy independence.
And it's of great strategic importance as well, because we can begin, we can expand the export of the gas, although it's not exactly easy to do so. But this could be very important for Western European countries, which are currently relying on Russia for a great deal of winter heating fuel.
Wouldn't it be the irony of ironies that we start shipping gas and even other fuels to Europe? I mean, isn't that just, who would have thought?
It would be wonderful.
We'll give them an alternative pump to fill up at instead of everything coming from Russia.
Yes, because over the last several years, there have been disruptions in pricing instigated by Russia as at the onset of winter.
Yeah.
The situation in Ukraine is related to that, of course, and many of the pipelines pass through Ukraine. But if the United States can find a way to increase gas exports substantially, I think it's good for the Europeans and it's good for us.
Well, we like that. Philip Van Dorn, ladies and gentlemen, investment analyst for MarketWatch, marketwatch.com. Grab a quick break. We'll be back.
Do you know how to get the most from Social Security? Don't let a simple mistake prevent you from receiving all the benefits you've earned. David Holland recently showed a retiring couple how they could get an extra $84,000 in Social Security benefits over their expected lifetime. Wow! Don't leave your money on the table. Call Holland Financial today for your one-on-one appointment. David can do a free analysis for you and show you the optimal age to start drawing Social Security and filing techniques to maximize your benefits. There is no cost or obligation. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Philip Van Dorn giving us some very helpful insight. A lot of great stuff over on MarketWatch.com. And we've mentioned four different articles that Philip has written here of late, all since February 3rd, some of these different topics we've been talking about with him. And another one that I wanted to get to, we've got a few minutes here, Philip, I wanted to make sure we got to, was companies with earning estimates that have been chopped by analysts. You wrote about that in your February 3rd article for MarketWatch. And what, I guess, if you don't mind, just from kind of the 50,000 foot perspective, and then we can get into maybe some of these individual companies, are overall, what are you seeing as a trend for companies meeting the earnings expectations? And then what are some of the ones where you're seeing this chopping going on?
Well, the chopping of estimates is mostly tied to the rise in the U.S. dollar.
Okay.
And the decline in oil prices.
Okay, that makes sense.
So we have done related articles showing which U.S. companies might be hurt the most by a rising dollar because they have a high level of exports to Europe. We've also listed the European companies that may benefit from the rising dollar because they have a high level of exports to the United States. But currency plays a big part in this, because if the euro has dropped 7% against the dollar, it may not sound like such a large number, but you get to points where the by a pretty decent amount by something like that. So those are the two big things that are hurting estimates so far. As far as how many companies have met their expectations this quarter or missed them, I don't know. I did not look up that information before we spoke.
Okay. And that's fine, Phil, because I know that there's been, you know, kind of a mixed bag there. But the interesting thing, you know, you mentioned the euro, as the dollar has gotten stronger, and of course, you know, translating, you know, to fewer dollars from overseas operations, is that these are the companies that are affected. And that, of course, reduces their earnings when they bring them back to dollars, where the dollar is strengthening. And right now, just, you know, of late, the dollar versus euro, it costs you $1.14 to buy 1 euro, roughly, in that trading range. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that it was much higher than that. And, you know, so it's that's had a big impact. And so do we have, what is your sense? And again, we're not going to be able to predict exactly what's going to happen. But are the indicators such that we could see a continuation of the dollar strengthening, or at least holding where it is, as opposed to falling back down?
Yes, we can. I think there's still pressure for it to be strengthened further.
Okay.
Because there are expectations that the Federal Reserve will finally begin raising short-term interest rates, maybe during the summer, which will make dollars more attractive.
Okay.
And the situation in Europe is unsettled. There's headline risk day after day as Greece negotiates with Eurozone leaders to try to change the nature of its bailout. Greece, as part of the Eurozone, lacks the tools that it might need to properly manage its economy. It can't devalue its currency when it has the same currency as Germany, for example.
Right.
So you have what might be an untenable situation because countries with different cultures and different economic policies are united in a common currency. It normally doesn't work. A currency union is very difficult without a more close and controlled political union.
Right.
And it's hard to expect a company like Greece to closely follow the dictates of a country like Germany.
Right. Well, that was exactly my thought. It's either going to go one way or the other. I first of all, I've never seen a situation quite like this where the party that is as such a disparate disadvantage, such a strong, I mean, Greece is really negotiating from an incredible position of weakness, and I guess the impact on everybody else is so severe that they're able to kind of rattle that saber, if you will, that, you know, it could hurt everybody else. But I don't know, I guess I don't understand fully why the European Union, especially, you know, Germany, they say, look, enough's enough, you're out.
They are afraid of a domino effect.
Yeah.
If any country leaves the union, who's to say what the effect may be on the entire Eurozone arrangement? So yes, it might make sense to let Greece go. It would not be unprecedented for a country to default on a heck of a lot of debt, sovereign debt. It may be best over the long term.
Right.
For Greece to go it alone, because then they can devalue their currency when they need to, as they traditionally would.
Right.
But no one knows how much disruption there will be if that takes place.
Well, we'll have to stay tuned and follow.
Everyone's trying to muddle through.
Yeah, agreed. Philip Van Dorn, ladies and gentlemen, investment analyst for MarketWatch. MarketWatch.com, gobs of good information over there on that website. Philip, I'm glad to have you back. We'll have to do it again.
Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.